Hello, my friends. This is Reverend Jill Carey from Unity of Wimberley, Texas. Thank you for joining us today, wherever you are and whenever you are. Thank you for being with us for this Sunday service. The title of our talk today is The Art of Taming Ego. And I know in some cases that might look in my house to the people who live with me as the taming of the shrew. I hope not, but it's possible. So we are in the extraordinary circumstance of being with ourselves more often now than we usually are. We are not able to socially interact as social creatures in the way that we have before. There is something about being in person, face to face with another, that has a different energy to it than our Zoom meetings, Zoom classes, telephone calls, texts, emails, even those 6 foot away visits that we have with other people. And so we are in extraordinary times. And I've been trying to think about what this new church looks like. How do we do this? Because we may be doing this for a while, and this is not something that we're accustomed to. I've actually said throughout my career, not necessarily as a justification for my career or my vocation, but because I believe it's true that the reason we have churches, spiritual communities, is that we need to be with each other. We need to be able to see ourselves reflected in others. We need that laughter and the tears and the nods of recognition and the laughter when we've discovered something about ourselves that we'd rather laugh at than take as a deep, serious thing. But also to be able to pray with each other and to grow and to learn and to share our learning with each other. And so now that we're here, there must be a reason for it. There must be something for us to discover about having a spiritual community that doesn't look like it's always looked. There must be some reason that we are now a little more isolated and certainly more confined than we've been before. This is whole new territory. And in a way, it's exciting, but it is a landscape that is unknown to us. I've been doing a lot of thinking and praying about this, and I have to believe that in the greater scheme of things, Spirit must be asking us to grow spiritually in this isolation. Spirit must be confident in us, that we can take this opportunity to grow as we've never grown before because we don't have each other. It has a different characteristic to it. It has a different face to it. If you work from home, like I am, you may find that the boundaries and the borders between your work life and your home life have gotten a little fuzzy. Maybe your sleep cycle is off. And maybe you're experiencing those times that you wake up in the middle of the night with an existential question running through your head or a free-floating anxiety that you don't know what to do with. You may find yourself aggravated over things that normally would not aggravate you, from the groceries that you can't get to the aggravation of not being able to just go and do what you want to do, to not have that social dependency fulfilled. Because I don't know very many people, if any, that live as hermits. We usually need each other in order to see ourselves. And now we're living face to face with ourselves. Now we are alone with many of our deep thoughts. We're alone with our spiritual growth. we're on uncertain and unfamiliar ground. And despite our own spiritual practices, there's that thing that's missing. And I hope that today and in the weeks ahead, we can continue to explore how we have spiritual life without it looking like we've always taken for granted. Here's the thing. We are not monastic people normally. That is usually something that is a conscious choice by nuns and monks and priests and brothers and shamans even, to live that quiet, sometimes even that silent life in a deep spiritual reflection. So maybe this is our modern day monasticism. I don't know, but that seems to have a ring of truth to it for me. That we are modern day monastics, not in a way that we would have necessarily chosen, but one that is being presented to us. Now here's the trick, as we're doing this inner work, we are also coming face to face with ourselves, maybe in ways that are not so pleasant. We're coming face to face with our ego. And that's where the growth occurs. I'd like to read you a definition of what the ego is, because we tend to label the ego as something bad. It's really not. It is the it is the definition of who we are. So here's what the dictionary says. The ego is a person's sense of self-esteem or self-importance. Nothing wrong with those, to have a sense of self-esteem and to have a sense of self-importance, to have the sense of separation of ourselves from others. It's when the self-esteem is too low and the self-importance is too high that we start to get into trouble with ourselves and with others. In psychoanalysis, ego is defined as the part of the mind that mediates between the conscious and the unconscious and is responsible for reality testing and a sense of personal identity. Again, this is good. We need this. Our ego is necessary to define who we are, to be able to get things done, separate ourselves from others. That's what we start doing from birth, is separating ourselves from the rest of the universe so that we have that identity. The ego is not to be obliterated. It's not to be wiped out. The ego is not something that we need to label as bad, because it isn't. The ego is just the identity of who we are. But we can tame the ego. And it is possible. It is possible. And it is necessary for ego and enlightenment to share the same space. Enlightenment is what begins to illuminate that ego, to heal the ego wounds that we might have suffered in the past, to fill in the places that our ego tries to assert itself. For example, right now you might notice that as we're living in a time of uncertainty, there is a lot of conspiracy theory going around, not really necessary. There is a lot of judgment. There's a lot of opinionating, because when we are faced with uncertain times, when we're faced with the new and the unknown, we tend to cast about trying to find answers, trying to find someone to blame, trying to find that solution. And we're busy, busy, busy trying to do that when the answers are to be found in a more silent and deeper place within ourselves. So if you're having that boredom, that irritation, that loneliness, that sense of you don't know what it is, that is the ego trying to find some answers. And so let me just read to you from, again, The Five Things We Cannot Change, that the ego is indignant about its having to kowtow to conditions that do not safeguard its entitlement to fame, fortune, health, happiness, and invincibility. This is a neurotic ego, my friends. This is what the neurotic ego is about. That's why we tend to label it as bad, is when it starts to assert itself in unhealthy ways. So I'm going to introduce you to what David Riccio in The Five Things We Cannot Change calls FACE, as in saving face. But let me tell you what FACE stand for. It's fear, attachment, control, and entitlement. Yikes. Fear, attachment, control, and entitlement. And when we're faced with a crisis, when we're faced with the unknown, we can move into any and all of those parts of our ego. These are the four motives of the driven ego and the cause of our suffering. We save face and we lose heartfulness. And the upkeep the ego requires can be exhausting. And I'm sure that you found that it is. So here's what I'll offer to you. That as we're going through these changes in our lives, as we're going through our modern day monasticism, there is a way that we can grow, that we can discover a fuller and more fulfilled part of ourselves. There's a way that we can live without trying to save face, fear, attachment, control, and entitlement. The ego is like a wild horse that has to be tamed. And enlightenment is the rider. And they can come into communion with each other. I was reminded, as I was putting this lesson together, about the time between Jesus coming out from Nazareth, his hometown, and before he started his ministry. He went into the wilderness, and it says that he came face to face with Satan. And Satan offered him everything that would have appealed to his ego, a way to prove that his life was immortal, to save himself if he threw himself off a cliff, offered him all the riches that a king of the earth would have. And the ego of Jesus had to be tamed during this time. And he kept having to say no to these things that would not benefit his ministry. And we know that after he came out of the desert, then he came upon John the Baptist. He was baptized, and then his ministry began in the world. But that ego that was appealed to with the things that would be attractive to a human being, those things had to be declined. So we have a good example. We have a really good example for that. So in taming our ego, let's look at these four aspects. So fear can be tamed by love. And the energy of fear then becomes excitement about challenges and caution about dangers. Fear is a useful tool to us if we use it correctly. Attachment, the antidote for attachment is letting go. We talked about some of that last week, about letting go of what we think should happen when we're faced with change. The energy of attachment can become commitment. Isn't that lovely? That the energy of attachment, rather than it being something that we cling to, something that we must have, we can let that energy become commitment to something greater. The energy of control is transmuted by allowing, just allowing. This is especially helpful when we're interacting with other human beings. We just allow them to be who they are. And that energy becomes the ability to get things done. That's how we use control in a positive way, in a way that our ego would have us use it, in the way that our spirituality would have us use it. Entitlement becomes justice without retaliation. In other words, entitlement energy could look like hate. And that is the unhealthy part of our ego. So the energy of entitlement can work for what is right in the world. It can work for good. And it can work without retribution. So we go from fear to love, from attachment to letting go, from control to allowing, and from entitlement to justice, without hate and without retaliation. These are just some of the tools that we can use. And I invite you maybe to listen to this lesson again and write those things down if you don't have this book, and see where fear, attachment, control, and entitlement might be making your days less enjoyable, might be disturbing your days, disturbing your sleep, disturbing your restfulness, disturbing your soul. And allow those to be transmuted by spirit, noticing it. Believe me, beloved, when you notice that you are in the unhealthy ego, the part of you that is noticing is your great eternal soul. It is your wise soul. It is the soul that observes without judgment. So allow yourself to observe without judgment, and then bring these things into a spiritual transmutation so that you might do good in the world and do good in your life. This is a powerful lesson for us if we're to live this life of, let's say, revised monasticism. This is a way that we can take what's being imposed upon us now and let our ego be tamed into something gentler, more compassionate, wiser, quieter, stronger. I'm going to lead us into a meditation, and I'm going to guide you through it with some statements that might be affirmations for you to think about as you go through your work in the desert, as you have your battle with the unhealthy part of your ego, the part of your ego that is, let's say, conditioned. And so, if you will, just close your eyes and let yourself begin to breathe. And I'll lead us through some affirmations that will comfort us, I think, and help us see how we can grow during this time. Just breathe with us. If you'll drop down deep into your heart, these statements will resonate there and become true for you. We become utterly transparent, no longer trying to look good. We accept rather than oppose any condition of existence, no matter how minor. For example, we patiently wait in line at the checkout stand or in the line for the grocery store instead of huffing and puffing. A more weighty example might be our acceptance of the death of so many in our world today, an acceptance with compassion. Grief includes sadness and anger, but does not mean that we become bitter or suicidal. We act justly in our own dealings and work for justice in society. We do not lose sight of the essential humanity of those who do evil things, never giving up on others' transformation. Oh, this is a deep prayer. I'll say that again. We do not lose sight of the essential humanity of those who do evil things, never giving up on others' transformation. This is an implication of impermanence. No matter how badly someone may have acted, he or she can change for the better, so we never give up. We forgive others and we look for ways to reconcile. We drop the expectation of permanence in anything at all. For example, absolute integrity in ourselves or fairness from others. We will fail, others will fail, and yet we know that our integrity remains intact and we have a chance to do better and be better. We acknowledge our own dark side. We admit our wrongs, present and past, and make amends. This helps us let go of regrets and keeps us humble. We feel compassion for the innocent who suffer, dropping the why. If it is a natural disaster, or in this case, a pandemic. Asking why, if it is human created, the why is no longer important. Compassion is. We do not hate. We cease seeking to be perfect, beloved, but want only to be faithful to our psychological work and our spiritual practice. We see the givens of life as moments that present us a gift and a door. We are thankful and we cross the threshold. Oh, beloved, whether you remember all these words or not, they have now dropped into your heart and into your subconscious, and they remain there for your use exactly when they're necessary. And so, my friends, as we come to a close in this meditation, please remember to treat yourself as the beloved gift of God that you are. Be compassionate with yourself. Remember that you are on a high and unique journey right now. Remember that others are with you, whether you can see them or not. Remember that the Spirit of Truth lives in you all the time, no matter where you are, awake or asleep. And brothers and sisters, I extend to you the hands of unity, the hands of compassion, the hands of friendship and love, the hands of solidarity. so it is.